Welcome to What Not to Do. I'm Kyle Schmitz, and this is episode 103. We're only 97 away from 200. It's awesome. Hey, I've got Miha Matlievsky here with me, and he is the fail coach. I can't think of a better guy to have on What Not to Do. You are going to absolutely love his story and this conversation. Hold tight. We'll be right back. Good men learn from their own mistakes, but great men learn from the mistakes of others. What Not to Do gives entrepreneurs a platform to share their failures to help equip you for success. We break the silence on failure, we demystify failure, and we help you overcome the fear of failure. So, still not sure what to do? Start with what not to do, because hindsight is 20/20.
All right. So I have the pleasure of having Miha Matlievsky. Did I say that right?
Yes.
Awesome. And Miha is all the way over in Serbia, which is amazing. It's amazing how we have this technology that we can connect. But more than that, Miha's after building his own businesses, he is has been a business advisor and I think has helped over 3,500 entrepreneurs. Is that the correct number?
Well, roughly there. Yeah. It grows every month. And I think we last calculated this about a year and a half ago. So it's probably over 4K now, but yeah, it doesn't really matter.
That's awesome. You're in the business of helping folks find the same success that you had personally for your, you know, for yourself, which is cool. And I love this. You're also known as the fail coach, right?
Yes.
Which is awesome. I mean, obviously the podcast here is called What Not to Do. And really part of that mindset here is we think that there are fundamentally two ways to look at failure. You could look at failure as a friend or a foe, right? You could look at failure as a friend, a coach, a mentor, a trainer, a teacher to help you on the journey to success. Or you could look at failure as a foe, as that worst, you know, enemy, that dragon that you just are afraid of and run away from. And it seems like you probably agree with us that failure is actually a friend. It's someone that can help you, something that can help you on the way to success, to learn from it, to fail forward. And you see as a part of that process. And so, I mean, I'm excited to have you on the show, excited to learn from you, man. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you for having me. Thanks for the invitation. And just to go quickly with what you said, failure is what it is. I mean, it happens, you know, I mean, you can't avoid it. Just the same way as, you know, one day we will all die. I mean, they haven't invented the cure for that. And nobody has invented the cure for failure yet. So we try, we fail. The more we try, the more we push ourselves towards crazy big dreams. And, you know, we entrepreneurs, we want to go on Mars and stuff like that. And the more you try, the more you fail. So it's really just part of life. And it's all about what kind of relationship you have with failure when it does happen. Because if you have a good relationship, you can bounce back quickly, you can learn quickly, you can grow quickly. And the sooner you do that, the sooner you will find success. And if your relationship is not that good, you go into negative emotions, negative self-talk, and so on, it can drag for quite a while before you bounce back. And it's really just that. But failure, yeah, just part of life. It happens.
Oh, exactly. And I love how you linked it with death. I think one of the great themes, like when you read, you know, the classics, or just say it in the world, you have this theme of like life, death, and resurrection, right? Life, death, resurrection. If you think about it, you know, if like life starts here and then death is down here and then resurrection is higher than when you were first started. You see that, like, for instance, like on those trend lines in the stock market, it's kind of like up and down when you zoom in. But if you zoom out, you just see this trend line up. And I think of, I love how you said no one's invented the cure for death. And no one's invented the cure for failure. But if we keep in mind, you know, that metaphor of life, death, and resurrection, that we know that there's hope after failure. There's hope beyond failure, right? In the same way that the metaphor of life, death, and resurrection gives us the hope beyond death, we now have hope beyond failure because in the narrative, there's that resurrection that'll take us to an even higher place, a better place, which is actually really, really cool to think about. Awesome, man. Well, we're already getting deep and we barely started, which is awesome. So, well, cool. Well, okay. Miha, do this for us. I don't know you from Adam. We've chatted a little bit on LinkedIn, but just more logistically, I'm really looking forward to hearing more of your story as you would tell it. And I'm sure our listeners are too. So who is Miha? Where do you come from? What do you love to do? Are you married, kids? What, you know, what are your passions, hobbies, all the kind of stuff? Who are you?
Okay, sure. Well, you know, Miha Matlievski. I am from a small little country in Europe called Slovenia. Just 2 million people, nothing fancy. But there are a few people that are well known in the U.S., like Dragic, the basketball player. What's the other one? I'm not really into sports. And even the first lady in the U.S., she's a Slovenian girl.
Okay.
Yeah, so a very small country. But then 3 years ago, I moved to another a Eastern European country, Serbia, a bit bigger, but not that much. And it's all because my freedom is doing as much as I can with the animal rescue. So that's one thing that I devote a big part of my life to. And the other one is fighting failure as the taboo and helping people establish healthy relationship with failure. I'm not married. I do have a very lovely first lady, awesome. But we aren't married yet. She often cool. asks when that will happen. So eventually I'll just have to pop the question, I guess. We don't have kids yet, but we do have four furry babies because I rescued... I rescued more of them, but those four are staying with us permanently. So we have four dogs, which is not an easy thing to handle.
No. What kind of dogs?
Yeah, and, mixes, just saved from the streets. So,
got it. Yep.
Breed unknown. and like you mentioned, I had a very... interesting entrepreneurial journey. Thankfully, the whole thing ended in a very successful exit. And I found myself with the abundance of time and money. And that's like the freedom that I love the most, which is the freedom of choice, where you can do whatever you want to do. I thought that once I reached that moment, I will probably, island and spend all my days drinking cocktails at the beach. But then after doing that for a few days, I got bored so hard and I took my phone. I opened the Meetup app and I just started going to meetups, meeting fellow entrepreneurs. Becoming, you know, a coach and consultant was never my intention. If anything, I had quite a negative overview of, you know, I was like, you know, if you don't know how to do, you teach. That was my attitude. but then magical thing happened. As I was visiting more and more of these conferences and meetups, you know, people ask you who you are, you know, tell us a little bit about you. What have you done in the life? And as I was sharing my story, more and more of them started asking me for advice and coaching and help and so on. And at one point, I remember I was sitting having a beer with a friend. And after a few beers, I was like, what do I do now in life? You know, like, do I start a new company? And it was actually him who said, well, but you love what you do right now. You love and it really, it. I felt like a billionaire in my heart, you know, being able to help others. And then when they turn back to you and share the stories, what you help them achieve and so on. I mean, there's nothing like that warm, fuzzy feeling in your heart. And I was like, well, yeah, I really do love that. But, you know, seeing myself like being a permanent coach, that was still yucky. And then, you know, he said, well, you know, you do things the way you do them. You do you. So, you know, if you think that there's so much wrong with the fake gurus and all that stuff, well, do it, you know, your way and do it right. And that kind of made sense. And then I was like, well, how do I name the whole thing? And it was, again, this friend, and this was after many beers already. He said, you know, you constantly talk about failure. All your stories start with your failures. You say you learned everything through failures. Well, you're the fail coach. And I liked it. Probably because of the beer. And I went online at that moment. I registered the domain and all the rest is history. And the more I do what I do, the more I feel so aligned with the whole thing. And just what I do, it's really who I am.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. I love the reluctant, in a sense, you're a sort of reluctant hero, right? You're kind of being dragged into this idea. But I love that you said, when you said you felt like a billionaire in your heart. I've often thought about, you know, that idea of like, you know, moving from success to significance. So like for you personally, Miha, you had a successful entrepreneurial endeavor. You had a successful exit. Like you said, you found yourself with abundance of time and money and cocktails on a beach only goes so far. It would seem to me that most entrepreneurs probably would get a little stir crazy just because of who they are, right? They can't just sit around and do nothing for the rest of their lives. And what's really, really cool is you wanted to take how your success and how you achieved it, and you want to now reproduce that in the lives of others, which is really, really cool. And that shift from success to really impact, or success to significance. I love that that's your theme. But I have a question, I guess, like, how do you mentioned, you know, the gurus and the coaches and all the kind of stuff. Like, how do you identify in life? What separates like a good coach from a bad coach, like a real coach from a fake coach? Like, how do you even discern that? There's so much out there, right?
Let's be honest, most of them haven't really done anything in the past. At one point, they started coaching people how to coach other people or something like that. I mean, you know, even some of them, they admit that they didn't have any real experience in the past. I mean, for me, it's important to, you know, when I'm choosing coaches for myself, to work with somebody who has gone through the trenches, somebody who duplicated things, not just once, because, you know, you can always be lucky once, you can't be lucky 20 times, you know? So I'm looking for somebody who has done it over and over and over, who has a proven, validated system, how they do things. I don't like blueprints because I don't believe in them. What I do understand is, you know, foundations, the you know, the laws of nature and the laws of business and so on, laws of, you know, weight loss, laws of, I don't know, everything, relationship building. If they walk the talk and, you know, if they're really honest with the good and the bad and the ugly, I mean, so much out there, they're really just trying to, you know, present you the great side, the Lambos and the mansions and all of that. I mean, yeah. Anybody who has been an entrepreneur knows that that's BS. You know, it's unreal. And so somebody who's open about past failures, but also when I can see, oh, this dude really learned, you know, from those failures and applied those lessons, that's what's really super important to me. I mean, that's my opinion. I know that somebody will say, well, you know, the coach for Michael Jordan was never as amazing as Michael Jordan at basketball, and he was his coach. I get that. Some people, you know, like people just with who know the theory. You know, as long as it's aligned with you, as long as, you know, you feel that fit. What I do see is that people rush into relationships. You know, your coach, that's a relationship. Maybe it's for a month, 3 months, 6 months, a year, whatever, but it's a relationship. So go on a few dates before you, you know, decide, before you sign up, test a little bit, see, you know, if it vibes with you, if they really walk the talk and things like that before you jump in. But so many times I have this feeling that, you know, people go out for a few beers and then they end up in a one-night stand, aka on a webinar. And then after the one-night stand is over, in the morning, instead of drinking a coffee together, they go on their knee and say, will you marry me? I mean, that's not what you would do in a relationship. Yeah. So why would you do that? You know, even with a book, not just with the coach, but even with the book. You know, if you are going to read that book and you will apply the lessons that that book is giving you, well, you need a little bit relationship with that author, who they were, what they're standing for. You know, do the dating, because it's hard to apply something you don't believe in. And another big thing is know yourself first. You know, there's just so much influence outside of us, you know, our wives, husbands, friends, social media, parents, society. You know, it's so easy to get lost. And, you know, I mean, a lot of people ask me, like, you know, where's your Lambo? Where's your Ferrari? Well, I don't need that. You know, I'm much happier when you see me chasing dogs around streets with salami in my pocket and trying to catch them and then take them to vet and then take good care of them for months sometimes, sometimes even for years. I have a dog that I caught 2 years ago and we're still trying to get him to be healthy so that we can actually go forward and try to find the family for that doggy. So, you know, that's what I love. And I'm saying, you know, freedom of choice is, I think, what at least all entrepreneurs want.
Yeah.
Now, the definition, we all have a different definition. And as long as you're living a life that is aligned with your definition, that is aligned with who you are, I'm happy for you. So not everybody wants Lambos. Some people want more time with their family. Some people want to travel more. Some people want to, I don't know, make a bigger impact. And some people want a bigger house. Or, you know, I have a friend in Slovenia. He's not an entrepreneur, but ever since I know him, and I know him like for 20 years or even more, he was always dreaming about a BMW. And then a few years ago, he actually bought a BMW. But you know what? Even after all these years, every single day when he goes into that car, it's love at first sight. I mean, if a car does that for you, go ahead. Enjoy. Yeah. You know, I just know that for me, when I was having all those crazy cars, you know, the first week was fun, you know, new buttons and new navigation and this and that. And you play with it like a little child in a Lego store. But then after a week, it's just a car. It had no meaning why would I surround myself? I don't make me happy.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. I love that. Like what you're saying, you know, the difference between principles and methods, right? So like one thing that you teach, you know, foundational things, you can't, you know, you teach foundational principles, and then how those principles get applied can differ from entrepreneur to entrepreneur, depending on what they want to build or the business or the industry, et cetera.
Yeah.
But the principles are what transcendent. And I like how you also link that with, you know, really, you know, freedom of choice is really that abiding principle that every entrepreneur is afterwards. Right. But the method, what they actually choose with that freedom, is different from every entrepreneur. And that's really, really cool, because, you know, like for you, you're not into the Lambos, all kind of stuff. You're into really helping to care for animals and be good stewards of that and find, you know, animals that are lost, help them to find good homes. And for the next guy, like your friend, he's into the BMW, or maybe the next guy is into the Lambo or whatever it might be. But the whole point is the freedom of choice. And then each individual entrepreneur is going to decide how they want to choose with that freedom, which is cool. I think that's a great way to put it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, you know, we all have dreams, we all have goals, and you just have to do what is aligned with you. So the first step is always know thyself.
Yeah.
And then you go from there. Because, you know, the worst thing that you can do is to live a life that's not aligned with yourself. And we so often do that. And that's when bad things really happen.
Mm-hmm. Oh, totally agree. Totally agree. Okay, so do this. Let's take a little bit deeper dive into what it is that you actually do as the Fail Coach. Take us in kind of to a day in the life of what you actually do.
Well, I mean,
and actually, maybe Mia, if I can pause you there, actually take it. We'll get to that. Take us a little bit on that evolution or that journey of the business that you started, and you had the successful exit. You kind of told us the story, but kind of tell us what that business was about, what you did, the successful exit, and then how you're helping folks today. You know, if that makes sense. Yeah.
No, I mean, I can start from the beginning if you want to, because yeah, there is a lot to that story. Yeah. I mean, I had the most wonderful childhood you can imagine. Like, I was living in a bubble. You know, from a child perspective, I had the most wonderful childhood. Now, that childhood didn't prepare me for life later on, but that's a whole different story. and I dropped out of high school when I was 17. And my father had a small family business, really small. But, you know, he said, well, if you don't want to go to school, you can come work for me. And, you know, like, my mom loved me, my father loved me. So I was more like son by occupation. That was years ago. So at that time, it wasn't yet any Facebook or anything, but, you know, it was just do whatever you want. And so I did a little, I always enjoyed sales, but not sales per se, but more like the networking, connecting, developing relationship. That was kind of like my natural thing. And so I did what was called sales. Other than that, I was just having a lot of partying every single day, and, you know, things would be okay. But then when I was 23, my father suddenly was diagnosed with cancer and died 3 weeks later. So it really happened out of the blue. And as I was the only child and I was already working in the company for a while, everybody, including myself, we thought, oh, maybe I've learned something, you know, so maybe I can actually run the company now myself. Not a good idea, but, you know, as things started to go down, every now and then you get lucky. So I met a few people who saw something in me, in my networking abilities and so on. And they said, well, you know, if we jump in, we'll buy out a piece of share from you. It was the majority share. And we'll, you know, provide you with everything that you need to do your stuff. So here's the credit card, here's the car keys, here's your mobile phone, here's the laptop, that's all you need. Here's the car, go do your stuff and we'll take care of the company. And things really went well. Like every month I was doing 100, 150% more revenue than the last month. So it was going crazy. And very quickly, you know, life was good again. And I was back to that entrepreneurial, creative type of person who sees problems around the world and comes up with solutions. And because I didn't have any longer the majority share in the company, I said, well, why would I bring new projects to this company? I'll just create new companies. I can do that, you know. I didn't learn really the foundations. I didn't really learn the lessons because, you know, everything was solved so easily for me, so I didn't learn the lessons. I started a few more businesses, all different areas, different industries. And one of them was I was an investor in a big, big real estate project. Like really, for me at that time, huge, $50, $60, $70 million project, something like that. And then 2008, and then in Europe, 2009, the financial crisis. Overnight, everything changed. I was in the middle of building that huge project. I got a call from the bank and they just stopped everything and they demanded their money back. And in Europe, you actually pre-authorize your bank that they can take money from all your other businesses, from you personally, your assets, without even going to court. Wow. And so I lost about $20 million in just one single day.
Wow.
And I ended up $5 million in personal debt in just one single day. And because the laws are a little bit stricter in Europe, I wasn't able to do personal bankruptcy. So I would wake up every morning to a whole lot of phone calls from people and companies that I started to owe money to. So that was my big failure. And then the bounce back from that, I mean, first, it went all the way to committing suicide, almost committing suicide. Thankfully, then the aha moment. Thankfully, then, you know, the long journey that took me 3.5 years of daily hell, where old Miha was fighting with new Miha, where old habits, wrong habits were fighting with new, better habits, and so on. But then to fast forward a little bit, and I'm sure we will go back to this part later on, but just to fast forward a little bit, in 2014, things finally came together. All the lessons that I've learned, and I really needed a lot of time, a lot of hard time to really learn them and for those lessons to really stick with me. So I started a new startup. I was able to scale that startup from 0 to 8 figures in the first year to 9 figures, multiple 9 figures next year. And then in 2016, I had the successful exit. I was able to repay all my past debts, had enough left to, you know, live comfortably. And soon after, the fail coach started. After I spent a few days drinking cocktails on the beach.
That's awesome. Yeah, what a story, man. $20 million overnight, gone. Wow.
Yes.
And then to wake up $5 million in debt, I think, you know, people listening to this, maybe they have some debt. It's likely that's probably not 5 million, right? So, I mean, you can imagine the pressure, the creditors coming after you, all the kind of stuff. And yeah, even to hitting a point of rock bottom where, man, suicide was an option suddenly, right?
I was already on the balcony. I was holding myself with my, just with one, with my left hand. And I was already like, you know, inclined over the edge and looking down, and I was ready to let go. But the thing was, you know, I lived on the 5th floor, and this apartment was just a few days from being taken away from me. And as I was looking down, I was thinking, you know, if you're on the 20th floor, you jump, you die, no brainer. But I was looking down and I was, am I going to do this right, you know, or will I just end up on a wheelchair?
Yeah, that's kind of a funny way to think about it, but man, just
amazing. Funny now, not funny then. Yeah,
not, yeah, funny now, yeah, funny yeah, now, yeah, but yeah. Not funny then. It's yeah, wow, just amazing. What was the startup? What was the industry? What was the problem that you're solving?
Energy efficiency. We were helping big retail chains and big hotel chains with very innovative approach for that time. With a lot of AI, BI, and all of those things on how to save how much electricity and gas they use. And then we were taken over by a huge Fortune 100 competitor. I mean, I know that a lot of people say, well, who was that? Who was that? But I don't know. I mean, I heard that, for example, Apple, a company we all know, buys between 200 and 300 companies per year. And we only hear about a handful of them where the PR is good. And otherwise, the founders of those companies, they have to sign a very lengthy NDA. And because this was a takeover by a competitor, they didn't want us to talk about that. So yeah, I had to sign a very lengthy NDA. So, you know, I'm not expecting that, you know, people will just blindly believe me, but it is what it is. And, you know, I'm trying to be as honest and talk about all the things that I can and really make sure that I share those. But there's always, you know, somebody who says, well, you know, we want the proof. But tell us about the company. We want to Google that. You can't Google that.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of funny, you know, they're assuming... Well, yeah, critics are going to be everywhere, right? I mean, you've got the critics that are saying, you know, like, yeah, what did you do? And how do we know your story is true? And yet those same people will go and trust someone that's never built something themselves, right? To coach them, right? You know what I'm saying? Like, well, yeah, it's kind of funny in that regard.
Yeah. I mean, it is what it is. And, you know, I've accepted that. And, you know, I'm always upfront and honest about it. Now, if somebody wants to believe me, that's cool. And if they don't, that's cool as well. I mean, you know, there's plenty who believe not the story, but when I start talking about the things and what needed to be done and the business techniques and so on, and they say, oh, I can see you've been there, and that's enough for them, and that's okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, the ones who don't believe, they will probably never believe anyway, even if I, you know, give them all the documentation. So it is what it is.
Right. So, yeah. So let's get into now kind of coaching, what you're doing now as a field coach. What does that look like?
Oh, well, interesting. I mean, I would say that I'm a business coach. But in all honesty, I probably do more marriage therapy, life coaching. I think that's like 70% of it, because, you know, everything starts and ends inside of you. And if you don't have that foundation done, it's very hard to grow and scale if the foundation is not there. You know, usually, yeah, they hire me for scaling, exiting, growth, and so on. I'm super passionate about helping new entrepreneurs. That's really a big passion of mine. And most fellow coaches ask me if I'm crazy, because that's kind of like the hardest niche if you really want to do it right. Because people who are just entering the entrepreneurial journey, they're dealing with so many inner demons. You know, when you're working with a 7, 8, 9-figure entrepreneur, they already, you know, at least have some of the things in place. But when people are just starting out, they are afraid, they are scared. There's the infobesity on the internet. They are lost. They don't know what they want to do. They try to be logical about it, which is not a good thing, and so on. So it's not easy, but I absolutely love it. So I do a lot of stuff with new entrepreneurs. One of the things that I recently started talking about and coaching about is the leverage of trust. Because, yeah, you know, when I look back in time, I was always able to turn to people that we had, you know, some relationship with, because I was never, you know, numbers guy. I was always quality when it comes to relationships. And so, you know, it's all about how you can grow and nurture the trust, and then how you can leverage the trust in the right ways so that you don't abuse it and use it and lose it. But yeah, next week we are starting a new mastermind for multiple 7, 8-figure entrepreneurs. It will be like a 12-month mastermind. I call it, we call it Operation Firehouse, because, you know, most entrepreneurs are just so much time on the fire ground, dealing with all the operational stuff that's thrown in their way. And the shit doesn't stop coming, you know, like it's like this endless number of fires that keep popping up. Like you take one out, two new pop up. And so the magic really isn't in being on the fire ground. It's, you know, the firehouse where you learn, where you grow, where you lay down foundations, processes, systems, where you, you know, create new leaders that can do stuff, where you figure out how you can delegate effectively and so on. So it will be all about how to do the due diligence or where you are right now, how to plan for the future, how to lay down the foundation, and how then to do the transition. I often work 9 months to a year one-on-one with a company. And then after so many one-on-ones, I saw that I'm repeating same things over and over and over. And so we decided, let's go with the mastermind so we can have more students instead of just working with, you know, because honestly, if you want to do things right, you can't have more than maybe 3 to 5 clients one-on-one per month if you really want to do it right. Mm-hmm. because it's not just the 1 hour of the call. It's so much of the preparation that goes into that and the intensity. And especially when they're already at, you know, 7, 8, 9 figures, there's just so much going on. So you have to really, really put your heart and soul into it.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. Okay, so why? I want to know why. Like, you could spend your days at this point, you know, pretty much doing anything you wanted to, you know, you could have cocktails on the beach. You could be chasing dogs with salami on the streets. It's why this? What is that overarching kind of inspiration, Mia, that keeps you waking up out of bed and giving your life to this work?
Yeah, I did like a Facebook Live a few weeks ago explaining this. So Fail Coach is not my why. Fail Coach is a tool.
Right.
A tool that I want to grow and scale again to fuel my two whys. And I don't even own Fail Coach. It's owned by a trust that we set up, and that trust will create two nonprofits. And one is the animals. Mm-hmm. On that journey from suicide to bouncing back, I rescued a dog and he rescued me in return. He was my guardian angel. And I still strongly believe that if it wasn't for him, I probably wouldn't survive. And so it's just this enormous feeling of gratitude towards him. Mm-hmm. And I just know I want to do so much more for animals. So that's one why. Is to create shelters, to be able to fund myself, veterinarian teams that will go and do things for free in the villages and remote places, and so on. So one is the animals. The second one is failures. Failures Anonymous. Failures Anonymous, the way I see it, would be AA type of thing, an organization throughout the world, small little groups of entrepreneurs and also other people who are dealing with failure, talking, sharing, overcoming. Because I almost died because of the failure. But I was lucky that I had that aha epiphany in that moment. After I started sharing my story, I was quite a few times reached out to by not people who almost died, but then made it. It was a lot of them as well, but also by family members of people who didn't make it through. Mm-hmm. And when I really do go deep into what was happening in my head and why that drove me to the point of, you know, committing suicide, there was this one lady. Her father committed a suicide, and she it was at a conference. So she approached me after that to talk to me personally. And she said, "Miha, I never had any closure. What drove him to that point? And after listening to your story, I can understand why he did what he probably did." And it was really just, I mean, that was the moment when I really felt this is what I need to do. This is what I have to do. I know that failure is a huge taboo. I probably won't see, you know, the world rising above failure being a taboo in my lifetime, because it's just such a big thing. But I do hope that I will be able to be that generator of the momentum, so that the momentum will come to the point where it won't stop anymore. That's kind of the thing. And so my two whys are Failures Anonymous, and the second why is the animals. And Fail Coach is really just a tool, because I know that I can give so much to fellow entrepreneurs. I know I can help them in a really good way. I know that they can benefit from that. And I don't want to depend on governments or UN or anybody to fund those two things. I want to fund them myself.
Yeah.
And so I have, you know, God-given tools, God-given talents that I can use. I can do that. And, you know, I'll be able to do it the way I want it and not, you know, some government official telling me what I can and what I can't do.
Yeah. Oh man, I love it. Yeah, just so such good in there. I love what you said. I rescue a dog, and he rescued me. I mean, it's just amazing, like how things like that work, and how that was a sense like this epiphany for you at rock bottom, and now that's tied up into your life work. And then I also love the idea of you know, you overcoming failure in your own life, and now wanting to help to make that help people to see that that's a normal part of the process. It doesn't have to be this big taboo thing, right? That's one thing we talked about, you know, on what not to do is we want to break the silence on failure so we can demystify failure and help people overcome the fear of failure. A lot of similarities to what you're describing with Failures Anonymous in that regard. And I think people tend to fear failure because they romanticize success, right? And because they see, you know, success as this, oh, this glorious thing, but then don't see all the failures that that person had on the way to success. They tend to romanticize success, but then are so afraid of not achieving that success because failures get in the way. So if we could start talking about failure more, breaking the silence on failure, it would help to demystify failure, and people would see failure as a normal part of that process. And then from there,
it
would
help. It's really simple.
Yeah.
It's really simple. I'm sorry for cutting you off like
no,
that.
No, yeah, go for it.
I want to jump in. You know, so the right relationship with failure is not an emotional one. It's a logical one.
Right.
Failure is never a single thing happening. It's something that comes at the end of a process, at the end of some journey, whether short or long, but you need to do a few steps to achieve something, a goal or I don't know, something. And so the three most common things, or the only things why failure happens, is so when we set goals, often we are in a state of big emotions, negative, positive, whatever, but we are in an emotional state. And we don't look at that goal from a smart goal setting technique. You know, is it attainable? Is it real? Is it, you know, let's put some time limit on it. Is it specific? Is it measurable? That's how you should, you know, form those goals. So if I say, oh, I want to lose 100 pounds in a week, I mean, that's physically impossible. But I might be emotional when I say that, and then I don't achieve that, and then I'm like, oh, I'm a failure. So either this goal setting is wrong, or either I'm doing wrong steps, or I have bottlenecks in my process and I didn't find them and I didn't eliminate them. And when I work with people who went through a lot of failure, who have those emotional scars when it comes to failure and are afraid to start again, we always go back in time and we reverse engineer why that failure happened. And every single time we either figure out that the goal that they set for themselves was completely wrong, or the steps leading to that goal were unaligned with the goal. Either they were doing the wrong steps or they had bottlenecks. Always. And when you have those aha moments, that's when you see, oh, shit, it was all my fault. You know, it's not God doesn't want me to be successful or something like that. But it's really, oh, it's all me. I can do this. And when we have those breakthroughs, then it's so easy to move forward.
Yeah. Awesome. Love it. Yeah. Well said.
What a conversation. What an introduction to Miha Matlievsky. I just love it. I mean, going from being millions in debt, to losing $20 million overnight, $5 million in debt, to holding on to a balcony with one hand, ready to commit suicide, and a dog changes his life. Right. And then from there, builds a business, successful exit. And now he is mentoring, coaching thousands of entrepreneurs. And more than that, like he said, 70% of that is marriage therapy. So, but I mean, but you can see him making a real impact, moving from success to significance. This is amazing. So I just want to stop here and say, okay, where are you? Where are you? Where do you find yourself in this story, in this timeline? Are you the guy that's having the early success before you lose the $20 million overnight? Have you just lost the $20 million overnight and now you're $5 million in debt and there's some dudes that are coming to look for you? Are you the guy on the balcony holding on by one hand? Are you the guy that has an epiphany, an aha moment, a turnaround coming from the most unlikely sources? Are you the guy then that goes all in and his business booms and has a successful exit within a matter of a year or two? Right? Is that you? Are you the one who's now on top and coaching and impacting thousands of other folks because of your own success and you're reproducing that significance in others? It's amazing. And so I hope that wherever you find yourself in this story, I hope you find hope. You know, Miha said that, you know, no one has found the cure for death or failure, right? And it reminds me of this great theme in the world in which we live, death and resurrection, right? And, you know, we have life and we have death. It's this dip. And then resurrection is, you know, shoots up higher than we were before we hit death. And I think we see those cycles in all of life. We certainly see those cycles in business. And we certainly see those cycles in our own stories. And we see that here. So where are you? Are you in that valley of death? If so, don't lose hope. Don't lose that resurrection hope, right? Things will get better. They will get better, right? And I hope that's what you take away from Miha's story. It's just that sense of hope, getting to know him, where he's coming from, that hope here that we have. It's amazing. And obviously, as a Christian, hope in God, we see that resurrection hope fulfilled in Jesus's life, death, and resurrection. And so that's where I think we pull macro theme. And then we see that reflected in microwaves all throughout life. So don't lose hope wherever you are. And even if you don't take to Christianity or whatever it might be, I still think you can acknowledge and see those patterns throughout life. And I hope that you don't lose that hope. Well, if you've enjoyed this conversation with Miha, as I certainly hope that you have, share it with a friend. Talk about these things. Maybe you've got a friend. Maybe it's not you. Maybe you've got a friend that would be really helped by this and kind of placing himself inside that narrative of life, death, and resurrection and can relate to Miha's story. And who knows, even maybe connect with Miha if that could be of any help to coach and to build up and to encourage there. He's just a great, great guy. One great way you can help to share these stories like Miha's, is to leave us a review wherever you listen, Spotify, Apple Music, or it's actually you know, Apple Podcasts, etc. Stitcher, Google, I think, has got their thing now. And so wherever you listen, would love to hear a review. Hopefully that's 5 stars. If not, I want to know about it. Let me know how we can make the show even better. And even if it is 5 stars, I'm always wanting to improve, always wanting to add more value, always wanting to give more than I take. And so please let me know how I can add more and more value. That'd be a blessing to you folks that are listening on the other end. Well, it has been said that good men learn from their own mistakes, but great men, they learn from the mistakes of others. So go and be great, and we'll see you next time.